Whatever the case, I'm delighted that you're here. We have visitors with us, and we're glad that you have come. I encourage you to get your Bible and turn to the 31st chapter of the book of Proverbs, Proverbs 31. I want to look at two lessons today, one this morning and the other this evening, on the ideal home. This morning we're going to look at God's ideal wife and mother based on Proverbs 31. And this evening we'll look at the parallel chapter to that. We don't often talk about God's ideal husband, or God's ideal man, but that's found in Job 31. And it seems to be parallel, at least in principle, with reference to the man, as Proverbs 31 is to the woman. So tonight we'll talk about God's ideal husband and father. So we'll start with Proverbs 31, God's ideal wife and mother. Let's consider what Proverbs has to say about the family, just to get a gist of how that Proverbs says a great deal about the family. I just want to run through a number of passages. For example, chapter 5, without giving all the details of Proverbs chapter 5. Chapter 5, beginning at verse 15, talks about marital faithfulness and the joy and the beauty of the marital faithfulness. Rather than seek an intimate relationship with a harlot, he talks about the beauty and the joy of that relationship with one's own wife. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. We come on to chapter 6, beginning at verse 20, and we see the warning about forsaking parental instructions. Of how he says, My son, keep your father's command, and do not forsake the law of your mother. And he goes on talking about, don't forsake the parental instruction. Well, chapter 12, and in verse 4, talks about how an excellent wife is a crown to her husband. So he talks about children. He talks about the intimate relationship of the marriage. He talks about the excellent wife. Let's go a little further to chapter 13 and in verse 24. And we see he says something about discipline. In chapter 13, 24, he that spares the rod hates his son, but he that loves him disciplines him promptly. So you see the flavor of the instructions of Proverbs on the home and the family. Chapter 17 and in verse 6 even talks about grandchildren, the children's children. Notice that in chapter 17 and in verse 6, the children's children are a crown of the old man. So he talks about children, talks about grandchildren, the benefit and the blessing that they are. Coming to chapter 18 and in verse 22, a man that obtains a wife has found favor of the Lord. So a man who finds a wife, that's what she should be, has obtained favor and a blessing from God. We come to the 22nd chapter, and there's instruction again about the training of children. Train a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. Verse 15, that foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod will drive it far from him. I'm just trying to get you a flavor of how that Proverbs says a great deal about the home and about the family relationship. But let's stop and drive a principle home that we need to understand before we embark upon Proverbs 31, and that is that godliness and faithfulness make for a great home. Two people who are godly Christians make the best marriage and make the best parents. So when we talk about God's ideal wife and God's ideal mother, or God's ideal husband and father, we're talking about those who ought to be godly Christians, and those who are godly Christians make for the best marriage and they make the best parents. I can't imagine someone thinking, you know what, I'm married to a person who's not really a godly person, but it's the best marriage I could have. Or parents being ungodly and they being the best parents. It just doesn't work that way. But another principle we're going to see is that sin destroys the home. When there is sin in your life, that destroys your home. So whether it's your personal godliness that's lacking, or whether you're rebelling against the laws of God some shape, form, or fashion, sin ends up destroying and corrupting the home. Not just premarital or extramarital relationships, but sin within itself destroys the home. But we'll see more about that as the lesson unfolds. But I want you to notice in Proverbs 31, and all through Proverbs for that matter, but particularly Proverbs 31 this morning, not every point we're going to deal with deals directly with the family relationship. Some of those deal with just her godliness, or tonight, his godliness. But when people are what they ought to be, that makes for the greatest marriage and the greatest home relationship and makes for the best parents. So let's start with Proverbs chapter 31, if you will. Beginning at verse 11, or verse 10, to the end of the chapter. Proverbs 31, beginning at verse 10, and we're going to read to the end of the chapter. This is God's virtuous woman. Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her. So she will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. She's like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. She considers a field and buys it, and from her profit, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hand to the distaff, and she holds her hand to the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor, and yes, she reaches her hands out to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. She makes tapestry for herself, and her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is well known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes for the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat of the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hand and let her own works praise her in the gates. Now that is a picture of God's ideal wife, God's ideal mother. We often call this passage God's virtuous woman. Growing out of that text is a picture of God's ideal wife and God's ideal mother. Now let's consider what it says about God's ideal wife and mother. First of all, the text describes her spirituality. If you want to be the ideal wife and you want to be the ideal mother, here's a text that tells you that ideal person. And it begins by describing her spirituality. Not so much beginning with her role as a wife or her role as a mother, but her role before God. Let's talk about her spirituality. First of all, she is declared to be a virtuous woman. Notice in verse 10, for who can find a virtuous wife? The American Standard says a worthy woman. She is a worthy woman. The New International translates that a wife of noble character. The Revised Standard translates that good, a good woman, a worthy woman. The footnote in the New King James says a woman of valor in the sense of all forms of excellence. She is virtuous in the fact, or in the sense that, in all forms of excellence, she strives to be what she ought to be in all areas of life. It means she has moral goodness about her. It means she is good because she's right with God. And what I learned from that, if we don't go any further and we stop at this moment, we've understood this principle that a godly wife makes the best wife. If you want to be a godly person, you want to be a good wife, then be a godly wife. Who can find a virtuous woman? We'll come back to that question of who can find her in a moment. But he starts off with her qualities of her spirituality. She is a virtuous woman. But here's something else about her spirituality. Verse 20 says, she cares about others. She cares about others. She extends her hand to the poor and she reaches out her hand to the needy. She is not selfish. She indeed cares about others. She practices the golden rule of doing unto others as she would have them to do unto her, Matthew 7 and in verse 12. She does so, that is, she cares about others, because how she treats others is how she's treating the Lord. She understands the principle that Jesus described for us in Matthew chapter 25, how we treat others is actually how we're treating the Lord. So she cares about other people. That's part of her spirituality. But that's not all. Here's the third principle about her spirituality. She gives emphasis to that which is spiritual. Notice at verse 25, strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. That tells me that her high morals and dignity and diligence are what adorn her. Did you notice that in verse 26? In verse 25, strength and honor are her clothing. What she adorns herself and what she wears that makes her so attractive isn't so much her outer looks. We'll come to that a little bit later. But the morals that she has, the dignity that she has, the diligence that she has. She's clothed herself, verse 25, with strength and honor. She has honor, and that's the reason that she rejoices. Notice at the end of verse 25, she shall rejoice in time to come. Why? Because she has honor. Because she is what she ought to be. Her emphasis is on the inward person, and that's what makes her the spiritual person that she is. She adorns herself like 1 Peter chapter 3 so well describes. Now notice in verse 30, let's go down toward the end of our text. She is a person who indeed fears God. Charm is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord shall be praised. Well, this woman is to be praised. So that tells me that she fears God. Well, let's stop and talk just a little bit about other passages that describe the fear of God. Jonah 1 in verse 9 showed Jonah was a man who feared God. And he said, I fear the Lord who made the sea and the dry land. He's talking about the awe that he had of God. So this woman is a spiritual woman because she stands in awe of the Almighty God. But that's not all. 1 Samuel 11 in verse 7, I often call that passage a classic in defining this concept of fear. She is afraid of displeasing God. That's where Saul and Samuel are trying to rally the people to battle, and they cut the yoke of oxen into bloody chunks of meat and send them throughout all the territory saying, whoever does not go out with Saul and Samuel, so shall be done to his oxen. And the text says they came out with one consent for the fear of the Lord. That is, because they were afraid not to, they went out and did exactly what they ought to be doing. So what I learned from that is the fear of God means she's afraid of displeasing God. When she looks at what God tells her to do, she's afraid to violate that principle. But furthermore, that means she seeks to obey every command. Let's go for a moment back to the book of Deuteronomy, if you will. I know of no book that says more about the fear of God than the book of Deuteronomy. So notice in the 17th chapter, here is one of the great descriptions of the fear of God. Proverbs says she fears God. What does that mean? Well, fear of God means this, verse 19. And it shall come to pass that when he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God and be careful to observe all the words of the law and these statutes. What Moses said, if you fear God, you're going to be careful to do all that God says. That's the kind of woman she is. Let's back up to the 10th chapter in verse 12. She loves the Lord with all of her heart. What does the Lord God require of you? But to fear the Lord your God, there's our concept of fear, and to walk in all of His ways and love Him and serve the Lord with all your heart and all your soul. Now this virtuous woman of Proverbs 31, that is God's ideal wife and God's ideal mother, fears God, which means she stands in awe of God, she's afraid of displeasing God, she tries to obey every command, and she serves the Lord with all of her heart. She's dedicated and devoted. What husband wouldn't want a wife like that? So did you see the principles of her spirituality? She's virtuous. She cares about others. She gives emphasis to the spiritual. And she walks in the fear of God. Now let's talk about her qualities that are found here in Proverbs 31. Let's list a number of those qualities that she has. First of all, because she is that spiritual person that we described, she is one who can be and is indeed trusted. Look at verse 11. For a husband, safely trust her. She has proven herself worthy of trust. She is indeed a deep spiritual person. Her husband has full confidence when he leaves. That is, when he's gone and he's not there, he has full confidence in her behavior. He trusts her morals. He trusts her judgment. He trusts how she handles money. The husband safely trusts in her. That's one of her qualities. She can be trusted. Secondly, verse 11 also says that she manages the household carefully. Go back to verse 11. That her husband safely trusts in her so that there will be no lack of gain. That is, she manages the household carefully. She manages the money and the possessions as a good steward. She understands what it means. She's thrifty. She doesn't waste so that he needs more. That's, I think, the implication of verse 11. Her husband trusts her, so, are you reading with me, verse 11? There is no lack of gain. If she's spending and spending and spending and wasteful all the time, then consequently there is more need of gain. He needs to gain more, but not with this wife because she's thrifty. She doesn't waste. Beginning at verse 11 and also verse 12, she cares deeply about her husband. This is God's ideal husband or God's ideal wife. She cares deeply about her husband. Look at verse 11 again. Verse 11 says, her husband trusts in her, there's no lack of gain, so that she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. That is, she seeks to please him. She does him good all the days of his life. Her conduct and her treatment of him earns that trust of verse 11. She treats him in a way that he trusts her because of the good conduct that she has. She pursues his best interest. And furthermore, the husband can then never say, she's hard to live with. Because he trusts in her and she does him good all the days of her life. But here's another quality. As we talk about her qualities, we must notice in verse 13, 15, 18, 19, and 27, we'll come to those separately, that she works hard and she's not lazy. Let's start with verse 13. She works willingly and doesn't complain. Notice at verse 13, she seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. So she willingly works. She's not a complainer about the things that she must be about doing. Verse 15, she is disciplined and she gets on with her task. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household. She's a worker. She works hard. She's not lazy. Verse 18, she stays with the work until it's done. She perceives that her merchandise is good and her lamp does not go out by night. Many mothers and wives recognize that. They stay up late at night. They may have to get up early in the morning to take care of the home and the family. She stays with her work until it's done. Verse 19, she's not afraid of hard work. She stretches out her hand to the distaff and her hand to the spindle. She's spinning and she's making her wool from which then she makes clothes. So she's not afraid of hard work. Now you think, making clothes is hard work. How would you like to make your thread and then make your clothes? That's what this woman does. And so she's at the spindle and she's making the things from which she's going to then make her clothes. She's not afraid of hard work at all. She works long and she works hard. Look at verse 27. The driving force that she has that makes her the hard worker she is she watches over the ways of her household and she does not eat of the bread of idleness. Her driving force is she's watching out for her family, doing what's best for them. Here's another quality that she has. She takes care of her family. Look at verses 14 and 15. She makes sure they are properly fed. She makes sure they have what they need to eat. She is like the merchant ship. She brings food from afar. She rises up while it is yet night and provides food for her household. She makes sure they're fed properly. Now, whether she's making money in order to buy that or she's preparing what her husband has been able to purchase, she's making sure there's food on the table. She takes care of her family. Drop down to verse 21 and 22. She makes sure her family has clothes. For in verse 21, she is not afraid of the snow for her household. For all her household is clothed in scarlet, and she makes herself tapestry for herself and clothed with fine linen and purple. She makes sure she's properly clothed. She makes sure that they have the clothes that they need. And so indeed, she's taking care of the family and seeing after the affairs of the household. Now verse 17, here's another quality concerning this God's ideal wife and God's ideal mother. She takes care of herself for the benefit of her family. Notice verse 17. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. That might express the energy and the force in doing her work. That may be what he's talking about. That the energy and the force with which she goes about doing that may be the idea of verse 17, girding herself with strength and strengthening her arms. Or it may suggest that she tries to keep herself fit and healthy for the sake of her family. Some commentators suggest they think that's what the idea is, that she girds herself with strength so that she can go about taking care of her family, that she makes sure that she's taken care of so she can take care of the family. That's an absolute must if she's going to accomplish all that this woman accomplishes in Proverbs 31. Now notice verse 18. Here's another one of her qualities. She tries to do her best. Look at verse 18. She perceives that her merchandise is good. Her lamp does not go out by night. That is, her merchandise being good suggests that she's seeking to do her best. She seeks to do quality work. whether it's preparing the food for the family, getting the clothes for the family, or the job that she has, or maybe it's going for the food from afar, as we noticed in verse 14 a moment ago. That she makes sure that she does the best quality of work, she does her best, and she's never satisfied with halfway or that's good enough. She's doing the best that she can do. But let's go further. Verse 21 and 22. She has self-respect. That makes for the ideal wife and the ideal mother. Notice verse 21 and 22. That she is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. Not only is she clothing them, but she tries to clothe them with the best that she can do. Verse 22, she makes tapestry for herself, and her clothing is fine linen and purple. That shows she has some self-respect. Let's develop that thought for a moment. What does that mean, that she has that self-respect? Well, she takes pride in how she looks. Not arrogant. This is not describing an arrogant woman in Proverbs 31, where she tries to look better than everybody else, and she comes across as being arrogant, but she takes pride in herself and how she looks. Her clothing is modest. Her clothing is such that it is not a sloppy mess. She takes pride in herself. Do you get a picture? Verse 22, she makes tapestry for herself, and clothing is fine linen and purple. That suggests that she's a sloppy mess as she appears in public and before her family. She tries to look like somebody that cares about herself. And that displaying she cares about herself is reflected in the things that she does for her husband and for her children. She cares about herself. There's a great deal of self-respect, verse 22. But let's go further. I want you to notice in verse 23, she helps her husband succeed. She helps her husband succeed. Verse 23, her husband is known in the gates where he sits among the elders of the land. She helps her husband succeed. How so? Well, she promotes his cause, whatever that may be. Whatever job that he may have. As long as it is legitimate and right, she helps promote his cause. She helps his influence. There's something about her. Go back to verse 23. Her husband is known as the gate while he sits among the elders of the land. This passage is not describing the ideal husband. It's describing the ideal wife. And there's something about her being what she ought to be that makes him the man of verse 23. And so, she promotes his cause. She helps his influence. She leaves him without worries at home so he can go about his business. He's not worrying about how things are going at home because she is the woman that she ought to be. A woman can either make a man or she can break a man. And this woman of Proverbs 31 is making the man what he is and promotes him to be what he is, and she is not breaking this man down. Now, I want you to notice in verse 26, she speaks wisdom and kindness. She speaks wisdom and kindness. Look at verse 26. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. That means she seeks wisdom to share. She doesn't just share wisdom because she thinks everything she thinks is wise, and I've got to give you my piece of advice on everything. But she seeks the wise course. And she seeks wisdom from the will of God first, but in the multitude of counselors there is safety and there's wisdom, and so she seeks wisdom from others. And when she learns wisdom, then she's willing to share that wisdom. She seeks to instill that wisdom in her children and tries to teach them and instruct them in the ways that are wise. She helps her husband with wise counsel. Any husband that's worth anything will recognize that a godly wife will advise him sometime in ways that he needs that advice and he needs that counsel and pushes him in the right direction. She's kind as she deals with her family. Did you notice verse 26? Not only is she speaking wisdom, verse 26, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. She's kind as she deals with her family. Her words are regulated by love, not out of anger. She doesn't holler, she doesn't fuss, she doesn't yell. That's not the kind of wife and mother that she is, but with kindness and love and wisdom, she deals with her family members and others around her. Well, we've seen her spirituality. She is a deep spiritual person. That's the ideal wife and mother. And we've seen the qualities, a number of those that are listed in the text. Let's talk about the praise that she receives. Let's talk about her praise. There is something about her that causes others to praise her. I want you to notice at verse 28 first. Her children praise her. Her children praise her. Look at verse 28. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Her children praise her because she lives a godly life. And they're thankful they have a mother that is living a godly life. Not all children have godly mothers. Not all children have mothers that are dedicated and devoted to the Lord. When you have a mother that's dedicated to the Lord, praise her for that. And thank her for that. This is the praise she receives because she's godly. They praise her because of the things she taught them. She instructed them in the way of righteousness. She's taught them the principles of wisdom, as we saw in verse 26. They praise her because of the correction she gave them. Though unpleasant at the moment, the correction received caused them to be the kind of people they are in verse 28. They praise her because of the care that she gave to them when they were young and as they were maturing and they're growing. Because of the way she treated their father with esteem and with wisdom and with respect. They praise her for that. So the children rise up and they praise her for that. The husband also. Go to verse 28 and 29 again, if you will. Her husband also praises her, and here's what he says. Many daughters have done well, but you have excelled them all. That you excel above them all. The husband praises her because she serves God faithfully. He praises her out of that respect for the love that she has for the Lord. He praises her because of how she's treated him. Remember that at verse 23? And verse 11 and verse 12? Because he can trust her. He praises because of the care that she gives to the children. Verse 28. And I want you to notice at verse 29, he thinks she is the greatest. Because she says, this is the husband now speaking to his wife. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. You're above all of them. He thinks she is the greatest. And he praises her for that. But now verse 30. Not only do her children rise up, if she's a godly wife and godly mother, her children rise up and praise her for being the good mother that she is. The husband praises her for being the good wife and mother, but others take note of that as well. Look at verse 30. Verse 30 says, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. In other words, others see what? We may think they're not seeing. Others are seeing more than we think they are. They're seeing in our home. And they see the kind of husband and they see the kind of wives that we are. The kind of marriage that we have. The kind of parents that we are. And when she's this godly woman of Proverbs 31, others see that and they praise her for that. One who fears God, are you reading with me verse 30? She shall be praised. How could she be this virtuous woman of Proverbs 31 and others not take note and praise her for that? And so, children praise her, her husband praises her, others, and here's the reason for her praise. Look at verse 31. Why are they praising her? Why is she to be esteemed and commended and praised? Not praised as far from the standpoint of worship, but praised because she is to be commended for the kind of woman that she is. I want you to notice in verse 31, it's her own works. Give her the fruit of her hand and let her own works praise her in the gates. Let her own works praise her in the gates. She is to be praised because of the kind of person. Not that she has earned somehow her position before God, but because she's doing the will of the Lord, her own works praise her. Verse 30, she is to be praised because she fears God. Remember that verse 30? The woman who fears the Lord, she is to be praised. Do you fear God? If you want to be a godly wife and a godly mother, then you must walk in the fear of God. Notice in verse 30, it's not her beauty. She may be beautiful. She may be the most beautiful around, but that's not the point. That's not why she's to be praised. Look at verse 30. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. Here's why she's praised, though. Look at verse 30 again. The woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Now, I want us to close by looking at her value. We've seen her spirituality. This is a deep spiritual woman. We've seen a number of the qualities that she has, from taking care of her husband and her children and a hard worker, and she praises God, etc. And then her children and her husband and others rise up and praise her. But let's talk about her value now. What's the value that she has? Well, verse 10 says she's a rare treasure. Let's go back to our question. We said we'd come back to that. And the question is, who can find a virtuous woman? In other words, the question, who can find, suggests that it's rare indeed. Something that's common and all around, where you can just look around and find it anywhere, you don't ever raise the question, who can find? Who can find that? You don't raise that question. It's because it is rare. It's not found just anywhere. You don't just find that everywhere. Who can find a virtuous wife? He is not saying it is impossible. He is saying it's difficult to find the kind of wife that's mentioned in Proverbs 31. That's not easy to find. If we don't learn anything else, let's learn this lesson from Proverbs 31. Let's learn this. That says we need to be very careful in choosing our mates. Young men, when you start looking for a woman to date, the girl that you're going to date that's going to become your wife, you look around and be very careful because of this very principle. Who can find a virtuous woman? They're rare indeed. Just because she's fun to be with doesn't make her the virtuous woman. Just because she goes to church doesn't make her the virtuous woman. Just because she's been baptized doesn't make her the virtuous woman. Just because she attends church all that doesn't make her the virtuous woman. Indeed, that's hard to find. Be very careful in who you are. It's a rare treasure. And then last of all, let's consider this. She's priceless. Who can find the virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The idea is she's far of more, far greater value than precious jewels. In other words, her price can't be given. Money couldn't buy her or replace her. When you found the woman of Proverbs 31 and you're married to the woman of Proverbs 31, you can't take money and replace that. You can take a car and buy a better car than what you have, or a house and build a bigger house and better house than what you have. But you can't replace a virtuous wife. Her price is far above rubies. Well, what have we seen in Proverbs 31? That's a quick look at Proverbs 31, getting a glimpse of God's virtuous, an ideal wife and mother growing out of Proverbs 31. We've seen a woman who has deep spirituality. We've seen her spirituality, her qualities, her praise, and her great value. That's God's ideal wife and mother. This evening we're going to look at the parallel text to that, that we don't talk a lot about, and that's Job 31. We talk a lot about God's virtuous woman. Job 31 is God's virtuous man. It's the counterpart, seemingly, to Proverbs 31, and we'll talk about that tonight. And we'll talk about the husband and father of Job 31 and Job's declaration of innocence and what he said and how that described God's virtuous man. There may be one or more present who's not a Christian this morning. Would you, if you're not a Christian, come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins and acknowledge the faith that you have? And be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins. Or there may be an erring child of God who needs to make correction. If you're subject in any way, would you come? All together we stand and while we sing.